Dr. Therese Hart, great to talk to you.
Great to talk with you.
Now, I've caught you on a brief window while you're here in the United States because, of course, you're most renowned, along with your husband, John, of working in the Congo for a long period of time. How long have you guys been working over there in Central Africa?
Well, the first trip to Congo, which was then Zaire, was in the 1970s. I went as Peace Corps, and my husband John went on a Watson Fellowship. And then we came back in 1980 to do our research for our PhDs and came back after that to study Okapi.
Well, I know that during that time you have seen a world of change, but I'm glad you're here to tell the tale because many people have said for a long time the DRC can be one of the most dangerous places in the world.
Yeah, it's a big place. It's very variable, but there are lots of unknowns and uncertainties there.
But also a remarkable diversity of wildlife and ecosystems. I know your early work, as you said, you were renowned for work with Okapi, both with research and conservation. And now my understanding is you're working not only with bonobos, but helping establish a new national park.
Right, right. The Congo is interesting in that because of the poor infrastructure and because of the large size, there are large areas within Congo about which almost nothing was known. When it was the Congo, the Belgian Congo, it was one of the best studied areas. But after it became independent, it was the countries around it that had the greatest new discoveries, new areas being looked into, and only a few areas that were national parks continued to have some work in them.
So tell us a bit about your current work and what the future looks like for a national park and how you'd establish one in Central Africa.
Well, the new park will be mainly within the basin of the Lomami River, which follows the Congo River going right up through the heart of the forest and through the center of Congo from the south to the north, where it dumps into the Congo River just downstream from Kisangani, one of the big cities in Congo. And the forest, it's all forested except for a few savannas, which are edaphic, very poor soil savannas in the south, but very interesting in terms of their flora. It's completely forested, and it goes from north, close to the equator, down close to where the forests end. So it's got a diversity of forest climates and habitats. And within it, there are many of Congo's most important, best-known endemic animals. There's the great ape, the bonobo, which is only in Congo, the okapi, the giraffe that's only in Congo, the Congo peacock, and we discovered a new species of monkey, which also is not only in Congo, but only within this area. So it's a rich area, even if it's relatively poor forest, so not a high density of animals, but a great diversity of animals.
So in your many decades working there, are there some hopeful stories or views that you think, gosh, you know, this forest, this ecosystem, these animals might survive through the 21st century?
Yes, I believe that there is actually a lot of reason to hope for this area. One thing is it's not only not populated, the 9,000 square kilometers, which we are promoting as a national park, has no villages in it, no permanent habitation in it, nor is it an area to which people are migrating. That in itself is hopeful. And then the fact that the people around the park, many of them have already started to work quite closely with us. So I feel that We will be able to have, and this is what we're working towards, is a national park which is supported not only in a distant capital, but also within the communities that surround it.
Which, of course, is essential for the long-term viability, because it's one thing to have it on paper and certainly another to have community-based conservation where people feel there's some win-win with that. So do you get a sense of that when you say people near the park are working with you? Is there some benefit to them or their families?
What we are working towards and working with them to establish is more control over their own forests. The land tenure system in Congo is ambiguous, and when it comes to actual use of the land, it can almost always be a strong person or somebody with government backing that has rights to either a concession or hunting, and the result is that the people who consider the land theirs find that it's being overexploited, in this case mainly by hunters. So what we're working towards is a community forests that will have a for which there will be a clearly and newly established legal right, legal ownership by the communities that surround it, and which will be managed in conjunction and collaboration between those communities and the National Park Agency. So that's what we're working towards.
Now, you know, I know from having visited the tropics and in Africa many times, the work you're talking about is not nearly as easy as you're making it sound. In fact, you being involved for decades in the Congo itself, you know, it's a virulent part of the world, not just, you know, danger from conflict, but goodness gracious, it's a hard place for people to survive, and yet you certainly have thrived there.
It's definitely a poor place, and it has a very poor infrastructure. Most of our workers are local, and you know, they live in villages without schools, often without without any kind of dispensary, any kind of, you know, medical care, and their only means of transportation out of that village would be by bicycle. So it's remote and made more remote by the fact that infrastructure is so poor.
And on a human interest side of this, my memory is from when your husband John came to the zoo probably 20 years ago to speak, I think you guys have raised your kids largely in the Congo as well.
Yeah, two of them were born in Congo, and all three of them grew up in the Congo. We schooled them locally until they were about 11 or 12 years old, and then they had at least part of the year schooling in the States, or they went to boarding school.
That is great. Now, I know when you come here, you'll tell about establishing this new national park, but also, hopefully, a little bit about your work with bonobos.
The interest in bonobos, our first work with along the Lomami River in the Lomami Basin, was just to find out what was there. And when we found a fairly high density of bonobos in the south, that was unexpected. And it was clearly an important area to protect just because of that, that there was a large community of bonobos that was not known about. Our work with bonobos has been less behavioral. We're not habituating bonobos, not at this point, but just to get an understanding of the population density over a fairly large area, and then to try to protect that. So we're trying to learn how many are there and understand their threats and try and protect them from those threats.
Well, all of us are excited that you're coming to the zoo soon to speak, and listeners can certainly come to our Barrows Conservation Lecture here at the Cincinnati Zoo on May 28th. And Dr. Therese Hart, thanks for taking a few minutes with us, and I'll see you soon.
Oh, yes, and I'm excited to be there. So look forward to meeting you.
You bet. Thanks very much. My guest has been Dr. Therese Hart. For Cincinnati Edition, this is Thane Maynard.